Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop, and hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Hadasha Beckman, CEO of Guardog Health.
We have apps streaming to our phone. We have every, you know, you can watch your kids on your phone remotely. Like, you can open doors and close doors and lock people out. There's social media. There's all these things. We still haven't figured out to help to what to me is the most important workforce, because they really deliver holistic care to patients so that they can provide the care that they were trained to do, that they want to do. And so that really compelled me to, like, why is there a solution that captures mistakes?
This is Hadasha. She has nursing roots. She started her career as a registered nurse and has built hands-on experience in emergency rooms and hospice care. This clinical background gives her a unique insight into the challenges faced by frontline healthcare workers. Besides that, she holds a master's degree in public health policy and management from Columbia University. It's in this intersection where the big idea behind Guardog was born, which she founded in July 2021 in the middle of COVID-19. Guardog is a clinical data integrity solution that uses artificial intelligence to address nursing challenges. Their mission? To prevent medical errors, reduce wasted nursing hours, and improve care for chronically ill older adults. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Hadasha to my podcast. We explore what's broken when it comes to supporting nurses in preventing medical errors. Hadasha shares her vision, how to solve it, and how she has bootstrapped her way to delivering a solution that nurses just keep talking about. She elaborates on some of her big lessons learned and resilience needed in getting traction and attracting funding. Last but not least, she gives advice on building momentum through laser sharp focus and smart product development decisions. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, why taking a user-centric approach is not enough to succeed building a successful software business. Secondly, how she started to deliver remarkable value without having built any product yet, and how that helped accelerate the journey. Thirdly, what she did differently to put a flywheel of growth in motion for her business in a world that requires a high-touch go-to-market approach. And lastly, how she built a resilient mindset to successfully navigate the challenges of entrepreneurship. Hi, Hadasha. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. I appreciate being invited.
Yeah, well, it's, I invited you because I got inspired by your journey. And since it's the Tech Entrepreneurs on a Mission podcast, I think you're part of the ultimate ones. I saw the story on LinkedIn about your company that you funded, that you created in 21. I saw the funding announcement, but then I also saw a little bit of the backstory about how you got into that and like the hardship that you had to go through either with your dad and later on also yourself as an almost accident being a nurse. So I thought I had to get you on the podcast because that's a drive that typically creates the most remarkable software company, because you've been living this yourself and you're so behind it. So before we start talking about the company, Gardok, a little bit about yourself. What drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
I think that, you know, it's interesting because somebody recently asked me, like, oh, I don't know how you do it all. You know, you have two kids. I'm a single parent since I'm 25. You have two kids, you know, you run a company, you know, how do you do it? I really was raised with the concept that our entire purpose on this planet is to leave it slightly better than the way we found it. And having a mission that speaks to that, that connects with that purpose, I think drives me. I think as an entrepreneur, I've had to learn how to give myself strength. A big part of that, I have to say, is CrossFit. Working out at 6 a.m., sticking to a regimen, being incredibly disciplined. But it's always been about creating a solution to a problem that is very, very real, so that I know I did my part. Because I do think that, particularly in today's day and age, we're living in a very difficult time. People are not getting what they need from physical, emotional, spiritual aspects. And anything that we can do to support them and to help people in their journey in this lifetime, I think gets me out of the bed to the 6 a.m. CrossFit and then on and on and on to my day of all the craziness that is waiting for me.
Great. Well, yeah, I mean, same for me. So I see you here. So that's a very good crossing, not CrossFit, to your to the company. You're talking about a problem that's worth solving and meaningful at a larger society level. What was the problem that inspired you to start a company in the first place?
I think it was, you know, so, you know, we'll go into what really was a turning point in my personal life and made me go on my nursing journey and so on and so forth. But for this particular company to come up with a solution, it was during COVID-19 in New York City. I was a consultant. I had a consulting company, but I had asked my clients if I could take a leave of absence for a couple of months and go to work as a nurse in the field, because there just weren't enough hands. Like, we were completely inundated and nurses keep getting COVID and then they would have to leave. There wasn't enough PPE, all those things that in those very early days, we're talking about March, April time. And I'm a floater. I've always been very comfortable in any situation, any scenario. So I was able to float around to, Brooklyn Hospital, to the Javits Center, which was the military base, and to some nursing homes, and do anything from critical care, oncology patients, to just basic post-COVID, post-extubation care. And I remember, like, sitting there one night. It was actually Passover. I sent my kids away to my family. So I there were a lot of deaths that night. And I remember there was just such poor handoff between all the nurses, and the nurses were crying. It was such an exacerbated experience. But what really struck me is that 20 years later, we're still dealing with the same problems that we had 20 years ago. No one has come up with a solution to give providers a safety net to have the information that they need to deliver proper patient care. And particularly in the United States, we don't have socialized medicine. So we do not have, like, a portal where all your information is kept. Your hospital uses one electronic health record, your home care another one, your hospice another one. So nurses, particularly nurses, not even physicians, are tasked to be investigative reporters. All of the onus of the patient's well-being is placed on the nurse's back, so that she can capture all the pertinent information. And it also, this information drives reimbursement. But that's a whole separate story. A lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure for a stressed out, overburdened workforce. It's a lot of pressure in the conditions that was COVID-19, but it's also a lot of pressure, even in normal conditions, which is where I've had personal challenges. And nobody's come up with a solution. Like, I was thinking to myself at that time, it's 2020. Now we're in 20, it's 4 years later. 2020, we have apps streaming to our phone. We have every, you know, you can watch your kids on your phone remotely. Like, you can open doors and close doors and lock people out. There's social media. There's all these things. We still haven't figured out to help to what, to me, is the most important workforce, because they really deliver holistic care to the patient, so that they can provide the care that they were trained to do, that they want to do. And so that really compelled me to like, why isn't there a solution that captures mistakes? Why isn't there a solution that gives a real clear baseline picture that feeds that information? My time was up. I did a 2 months, nothing major. They were ready for the real nurses to come back because I was administrative for so long. And I went to research, is there a software company that serves as a catcher's mitt, you know, for the baseball analogy? You guys don't have that in Europe so much, but that captures those errors in during the critical time frame. And there just was nothing. So then I said, if no one's doing it, I'm going to do it. There's no reason not to. And that started a very long, very complex journey, which required a lot of resilience and fortitude. But here we are today, you know, where we are, which is a seed stage company.
Exactly. And what a story. And I mean, yeah, the way you tell it, it brings back all the memories about what happened then. I mean, in Spain, of course, it was bad. In Italy, it was bad. But I mean, I also remember vividly what happened in New York. And you're so right. It's crazy, you know? Every time these crises happen and we end up in the same problems that we've been for. And after that, we just continue our life and hope for that it'll never happen again. And of course, that's not the truth, of course.
No, unfortunately. Unfortunately, these things are destined to happen, but we have technology today. So we can arm ourselves. We can be stronger and we could be better.
Exactly, exactly. So then you started, you decided, okay, I give it a go. I mean, on LinkedIn, it says June 2021 that the company was founded. So where do you start then, you know? What has been a fundamental decision that you took back then that has really helped you with the success you have today?
So I didn't know much about technology, to be honest with you. I'm an interesting CEO because I'm a nurse entrepreneur, but I wasn't a techie. I don't know much. And the biggest joke is that my 18-year-old son programs my phone for me, and he's been backpacking through the United States now. And he's finally coming home. He's coming home tonight. He's leaving tonight. He'll be home tomorrow. And I'm so excited just because I don't know how to work the TV. I need him to do all the things for me. So I'm not a technology driven person. I didn't really know much of anything. What did I know about startups other than watching the, you know, Social Network, that movie about Facebook? I didn't really know much about it. But I did have a consulting company and I did have a ready reputation as a strong nurse consultant focused on quality assurance and risk mitigation. So what I did was I approached a couple of my clients and I said, I have a pilot I would like to conduct with you. You're going to have to pay for it because I believe that you need to pay for things to have buy-in. But what we're going to do is I'm going to audit every single nurse-patient interaction. It was a home care company and the other one was a skilled nursing facility. And I arranged that this is an incredibly manual way. And this was under the umbrella of my old consulting company. That every single time a nurse in a home care agency would see a patient in the US, on the back end, I would have that chart audited. How I did it was pretty clever and interesting. I created sort of like an instruction manual on how to audit a chart, what compliance requires for it to be a legal chart audit to meet the requirements of a compliance chart. And then because of the time zones, I found a group of nurses were living abroad, primarily in Israel. That's the connection. So they had no work because the whole world was shut down. So when you move abroad, you have to switch your licensure. But most places were not allowing these people to switch their licensure. So they were just a workforce that was sitting there doing nothing. But they have American licensure. So they can very easily audit. They have the education, the critical thinking training. So we're using Excel, Smartsheet, a lot of Microsoft products. We created a system where every single time a patient would be seen in the States, a chart would be audited within 24 to 48 hours. The nurse who was delivering care to the patient would get all the errors that we found. They would correct it, but we didn't stop there because this is the nursing process. And this is why I'm so proud of creating a software for nurses by nurses. The nursing process is called ADPI, assessment, diagnosis, planning, intervention, and then evaluation. So we don't just say, okay, here's a mistake, fix it. We double check it. And we make sure that the full circle is, there's a full circle. And then we can say that the chart is compliant. And this grew rapidly. I started to get more clients. You know, all the clients know each other, particularly in the New York, New Jersey area. They're all interconnected in long-term care, it started to really take off, and we grew tremendously to 9 paying customers. We were servicing over 4,000 patients. 2 of my clients had surveys because the CMS surveys healthcare organizations through the state. So they send a state surveyor who's a nurse who audits the charts primarily and looks around the facilities or the organization to see what's going on. But primarily the charts are really where it's at, because that's how you know what's going on in a facility. And the 2 of them had surveys with 0 citation. So it worked. So now I have more interest. One of my very large clients was asking me, how do we get, you know, we want to do this too. Because they're an insurance company, but they were insurance brokerage. They were interested in partnering with me, and I couldn't do it. It hit a point. I went to my oldest sister, who at the time was working with the finance ministry in Israel. Now she's at the World Jewish Congress. But at the time, I go to her and I was like, this is bigger than I think it is. I could take it with just a bunch of Excel spreadsheets and cookbooks. And I think it could be something really big. And I think it's important that we do this. So she started to help me try to find partners. This is weird. Entrepreneurship is hard, especially when you're an industry outsider. She introduced me to some people at the teammate, to people along the way who were not with me, who didn't last because they weren't right for the journey. You know, it does take very thick skin and resilience, okay. And not everyone can do it. So I started on the journey to build the right team. In August of 2023, I got my first check. I got it from an angel whose wife had some breast cancer issues, and he heard what we were doing, how we were preventing documentation errors, and he just was blown away. So he, without even meeting me, and it was on a cell phone call because my son lost his passport. He was in Grand Central Station. I'll never forget it, because they always say it's that first check that brings all the other checks. And at this time already, I was bootstrapping from the previous company, and I was really, and we were, I was in the MASH challenge. I had somebody working with me on the technology. So we had some traction, and we had customers waiting to pilot with us, but we really needed money outside of my own. And this guy, his name is Noam, he said to me, I think what you're doing is amazing. He didn't even see me on screen. It was like a Zoom where I was sitting there trying to get a passport for my son in this one of these places in Grand Central Station. And he's like, I believe in what you're doing, and I'm going to send you $50,000. And that was a huge turning point, because once he believed in us, it gave me the confidence. And right after that, Fresh Fund, which is a Israel-based VC, and Spring Bank, which is a U.S. first check, 2 energetic women who just want to change the world, also invested, and another 2 angels joined. And that was our pre-seed. It was a safe of $885 to get us out of the gate. At the same time, I was doing all the fundraising rounds. And since I got to Israel, prior to August, when I was in the MASH Challenge around May time, I met with Jonathan Glazer from Patango Ventures. Patango Ventures is one of Israel's most prestigious, oldest funds, a large fund of over $2 billion. And I met with him, and he's a doctor. He was a doctor of emergency room, and I'm a nurse trained in emergency, Forest Hills Hospital. And we hit it off, and I told him what I was trying to do, and he really believed in it. And he's like, I need to see traction. I need to see KPIs, and I will stand by you and fight for you every step of the way. And so once we had the $885,000, it was so important to have raised those funds. We were able to create an MVP, get customers, paying customers on board, see how the system works, see how the nurse is going to use it. You can create a system, but it's all about utilization at the end of the day. And we had some great traction, and he stood by us, and he stood by his word, and he arranged the seed round, which was $3 million. So we ultimately raised about $3.9 million technically.
Okay, well, that's like a long story in a very short time frame. Let me try to kind of summarize that. So, I mean, my question: what was an early step in the start of the company that made all the difference today? And I think what I capture from here is, find a problem that's worth solving, then start solving it, even in a scrappy way. Like you said, you did the hard thing, but there was no system behind it.
No.
And that got traction. It got noticed by the right type of customers, because it gave the proof that things can be done without errors.
100%. And what's also, I think the really cool part for me was that the nurses liked it. I thought they wouldn't, because who likes being told what you did wrong? But it was all about how we delivered it. And also, they really felt the support. I joke about this all the time. I'm the middle girl of four girls, and I always had big sisters looking out for me. And we became the big sister of the nurses. You know, instead of being big brother who's watching you with the crooked eye, we became the big sister, like supportive, like we've got your back.
Let me make a small interruption here. Hadasha just made an excellent remark about one of the things that makes her product remarkable. She makes nurses feel supported, even though they're being told what they did wrong. Often it's small things that determine whether users will love your solution or not. It's not about what your solution does, but how it does it. And remarkable software companies get that. They acknowledge that they cannot please everyone. With that, they focus on the essence, i.e. they zoom in on their dream customers with a level of detail that makes all the difference. And then they turn it into new value possibilities that increase the desire of people to use the product more and not less. And you can master these traits as well. The first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
And it was about how we delivered these errors and the corrections, and then also being able to monitor its impact on the organization in terms of compliance, in terms of money, you know, or reimbursement. That's a little bit more challenging, but, you know, it was something that we're able to really eyeball and create like a real value, even in a manual sense. And that's why it has to be a software, because it's really important. Because even for this small group, not so small, but 4,000 patients, we had tremendous impact. So could you imagine how much bigger the impact can be with the right technology?
Exactly. Now you're hitting the right point here, because you know you can develop software and software and software, but if the people that need to make the impact with it don't want to use it, it's game over, because then you get a top-down approach, and I mean, nobody likes that. So I like your connection here that you say it's not big brother, but it's big sister, and big sister is having your back, as you say.
Yeah, 100%. The way we designed the software was very nurse-focused. You know, can we be applicable to physicians? We have a small pilot going on with nurse practitioners and physicians for telemedicine that we still keep today. It's manual, but we do incredibly well with it. We can go, but I think for me, it was very important to create a software for nurses, by nurses, understanding the workflows, understanding the hardship. I remember being 27 years old, having two little kids at home and wanting to go home and take care of them. But I was still doing my documentation. I had all these mistakes. My nurse manager came with a PDF report to yell at me about it. And I was sitting there, and Facebook just reminded me. It said, I used to say, nursing mathematics, 12-hour shift equals 16 hours. Because you wouldn't leave because you're stuck with all this documentation. And it costs you, you know, a lot of nurses are in similar situations as I was at the time. And it costs you so much money on the babysitting, you know? So yeah, you're getting a decent salary, but you're also paying a ton of money on babysitting. You just want to go home to your kids. You're tired.
Exactly.
But, you know, so being able to focus on the user experience and making it as easy as possible and not disruptive to their workflow, I think is a challenge for every single organization. But I think it's something that we're definitely on the right track in terms of our current utilization reports.
I like what you say there. And I mean, first of all, the whole connection with by nurses, for nurses, it really speaks to who's it for and also who's it not for. And because you've been part of them and you live sort of, you've been walking in their shoes, you understand like no one else, like what needs to be done. And like you say also, it shouldn't disrupt their workflow because they're busy enough. And this is about the things around it that nobody likes to do in the first place. I mean, I come from the ERP world. And in the ERP world, we have modules, for example, to do time tracking, to do time sheets, to do expenses. Now, you cannot make those products easy enough or simple enough. Still, everybody hates it. it's not something that people look out for to start using. So this is a pretty big challenge to cover. In relation to that, what has been the hardest nut to crack to get it right?
To get it right, so I have to say that I'm incredibly grateful for our partners. Our clinical partners, the nursing homes that use us, have been incredibly welcoming and supportive. We have excellent communication. I think the hardest part for me was that fundraising round. it just was very, very difficult because I think that a lot of VCs have a formula for how they see entrepreneurs. And I had a successful consulting company. I was making quite decent revenue from that, but they didn't understand how a company can be led by somebody who's not technical, who's not from this entrepreneur formula. And so it was very different. I needed people who believed so strongly in solving the problem. You know, like that book, Fall in Love with the Problem, Not the Solution. I needed people who really believed in the problem that I was solving to buy into it. Because so many other people are like, how are you going to pull this off? How are you going to build a technical team? Okay, so I had trial and error, but we did it. We did it. We have a working product today. We have 19 people working for us here in Tel Aviv. Mostly in Tel Aviv and then divided with the states because that's where our core business is. But, you know, we did it with the right guidance, with knowing what I know and knowing to ask questions or ask for help with what I don't know. I think that was something that helped me. But I think the most difficult part definitely was the fundraising and having those early days people to really believe in us, to believe that we can actually do what we're saying we're doing. And I think we've shown already in terms of hitting our milestones that we're doing exactly what we said we were going to do. And then the willingness to pay was always challenged. Like, are people going to pay for this? You know, are they going to? So that's always been challenged, and we worked on that.
Well, I mean, I got a question on that. If people, you approach them and you're going to do something together and you say, and you need to pay for this. What made it at some point in time that people were saying, yeah, of course I want to pay for this. Where can I sign up?
So I think that for our early partners, they had no solution to this problem and they're short staffed. It's happening in the United States, particularly there are many states that have a nursing home staffing mandates. So they will have to usurp nursing hours for administrative tasks that could be delivering patient care that they have to meet. And also the way it works is that you can't accept more patients if you can't deliver direct patient care. So they're really strapped to not be able to meet their baseline clinical compliance. So if we take away that whole headache of compliance and we come in at a price point that is significantly less than adding an additional nurse to your staff, then we have some stickiness in terms of willingness to pay. And then we made it worth their while, like a trial that was discounted, where they were able to see the KPIs, where we were able to increase value-based payments and reduce risk. And as we're able to drive that up, then, you know, they agreed to go towards full price. So, you know, but it definitely is a challenge anytime you're going to do a SaaS, particularly when you're taking a manual task where people see the person doing it and you're moving them to a SaaS solution, there's a paradigm shift. So you have to be prepared for pushback where it's like, wow, I pay for my LinkedIn only $90 a month. So why am I paying for this? And you have to explain to them the value, but I think it's really important to show the data, and the data will drives the payment, the willingness to pay, as long as you have the data.
It's something that I hear more and more, luckily, because I mean, like I said, I come from the ERP world, and people just assume, okay, you pay for something, and of course it's sort of a need to do business, not like a want to do business with. But to kind of communicate back, okay, this is the value that you have created, actually, kind of paints a different picture in people's mind, which is also, of course, very important when it comes to renewal. You know, so many companies 100%. At the end get scrapped from the list because at the end budget needs to be cut and no one has a clue how to explain why this is so valuable. Well, what happens?
100%.
If you put it into their face, okay, you've done so many assessments, audits, and you've saved so much time, you've made significantly less errors, like zero errors, and this is the monetary value of that, then it's an easy thing. Then it becomes a mission-critical tool.
100%. And we give you back nursing hours. You got back some nursing hours. And that's the greatest part, is that one of the directors of nursing was telling us that this has given her back time. Like, has more time. Now she can spend more time with nursing education or doing hands-on patient care, because in some of states, the director of nursing is pushing a med card because they're so desperate for staffing.
Exactly. Yeah, the pressure will just go up. You know, look at, in the Netherlands, they're cutting on healthcare again. And, you know, so this is a national thing. And the problem doesn't go away. So, I mean, you have to do more with less at the end. That's maybe the mantra. So you're talking about you getting your first customers, which are more your network, and then people start talking to each other. What has been the biggest learning to get to the number of customers where you are today? I mean, I'm not sure where it is today, but what are the biggest learnings? And did you see sort of a tipping point at some point where it became easier?
So we've been beta testing and we're with our early adapters now. So what we do is we do business with franchise groups. So one group has 36 nursing homes, another one has 5, another one has 17, another one has 18. So we start with one home, we show the KPIs, we show how good we do, and then we go to their next one and then we launch. I think for me, I have to now take a step back and say it's my team. I have an amazing director of clinical operations. Her name is Rachel Duffler. And she handholds every single launch. And we do every single launch in person, even though we don't need to, because the software is very easy to use. Our launches don't take more than an hour because it's that easy to use for the nurses. It's complicated on the back end in terms of the AI, in terms of what we're extracting. But on the user side, it's really, really, it's like, it almost looks like Facebook or LinkedIn, like something that you use every day. So she created a program that, again, is very nurse-centric. We don't eat up too much of their time. We do weekly check-ins with them. We communicate with them if we see that they're struggling. A lot of education and hand-holding, creating, tools that they could use, like we printed and laminated how-to guides because we know that the units are dirty and that you could just hang it up. So Rachel has been really integral in that customer success. And then I work mostly with the facilities on showing them the value. It does take about a full quarter to see the value. At first, you're seeing, okay, the nurses are using it. And it's really cool because you'll see the errors. The errors start getting reduced because it's like working out. I liken everything in life to working out. But the more you work out a muscle, right? Like if you, the more you're going to do crunches, your core is stronger, right? So the more you are aware that this error happens, the less likely you are to repeat it. So the nurses actually get better. And now, like I said, we're going to be partnering with a learning management system platform to actually help them internally learn what their specific personal pain points are so that they can, first of all, strengthen themselves and then also to account for the annual mandatories. So they get two things for one. So it'll be really cool. We're not inventing an LMS. We're partnering with an existing strong company. That's one of the synergies we talked about.
Yeah. Has it been a deliberate choice from the start? Because I mean, this is also maybe one of those fundamental choices. Like one of the things I hear a lot at the end, and of course that is the art of decision-making in what do you focus on and what do you don't focus on? Because I mean, technically, of course you can develop everything from scratch. At some point you say, okay, hey, I'm going to work with the things that are available already, possibly an LMS, and I'm going to build something on top of that that creates the differentiated power.
We're focusing on, something like the LMS is not necessary for us to build. Our core building is our AI, our what we call guard doc language on the back end, because we have to create language. And also our core business right now, everyone asks me, okay, so when are you going to go to hospitals? Or you could be global. We could be the autocorrect for nurses throughout the whole world, but not right now. Right now, my passion always has been chronically ill older adults. I specialized in hospice and palliative. And I believe that this is a very underserved community. And I think that with one mistake, one error is catastrophic for somebody who is chronically ill. I'm not saying that it's not catastrophic for anybody else, but I'm saying that, this is a vulnerable population. And these are organizations, particularly in the states, that tend to suffer the most from the shortage. Because if you're a nurse fresh out of nursing school, you want to do what I did. You want to go to the ER. You want to go to some of the sexy places. You don't want to go to a nursing home. And they can benefit the most from having the system. And so our focus is long-term care, chronic disease. And then we'll expand, to other spaces. But that is really where we're focusing. And it's nice because when we talk about the guard doc language and how we're building our AI, protocols are the same throughout all of these segments. They really are the same. The way you treat a patient with a decubitus ulcer in a nursing home is the same in a hospice unit. You still do your best for them. You still have to follow specific protocols with turning, repositioning, matches, and all that. And so that really gives us an advantage to be better quicker because it's a lot of repetition.
Exactly. Love that you say that even in the world of hospitals or nursing, there are a multitude of segments that you can focus on and deliver even more value, meaning at the end that sales cycles will be shorter, you create fans faster, and that flywheel starts to grow. So 100%. I mean, kudos for you for making that point, because a lot of companies at the end decide, okay, you know, this can be used by all nurses around the world, and therefore we're going to target all of them, and there'll be no kind of issues.
We'll go there when our Guardduck language is so, you know, because we still on the back end use nurses to QA. And the reason we do that is because how much I love technology and believe in technology, and I love my team. Like I said, I've got a whole mixed of group, and they're really positive and really energetic and really mission focused. However, I still need to double. We're in healthcare, we're in the business of people, and we can't afford one error. We can't afford one glitch. And so we keep nurses in the loop on the back end. The same nurses since 2021, three of them are the same, and doing QA. So they work on the QA side. And I think that's a very important aspect that we have. But by the time that we'll be ready to expand to other markets, I think that we will trust that the system is 100% ready for to be independent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like you said, the language. It's the language also to your customers, but of course also what happens with the AI. And it's, yeah, like you say, every error that you create could be fatal.
100%.
Not like an error in Dropbox.
No, 100%. This is human beings at the other end. And, you know, I remember when I was in the Mass Challenge, I was presenting my deck to all the other entrepreneurs. And I told everybody, like, in this room, it was only 10 people. It was a small pod. Said, how many of you have a loved one who was affected by a mistake that was made by a clinician, just innocent mistake that, or didn't receive the right information? Every single person raised their hand. And, you know, as you are aware of my story, for me, it's such a personal issue, because I remember being 15 years old and my father was always very sick. He's a great guy, academic, brilliant person, was always very sick. So we knew he was, you know, struggling with healthcare issues, but he went to the hospital for something related to his dialysis, and the nurse information didn't transfer. They just didn't have the, one of them had it, you know, entered into the computer. The other one didn't see the full chart. She only saw aspects of the chart. She gave him antibiotics, and, you know, that accelerated his passing, which was a very hard thing to understand. But I remember everybody in my family was very upset, particularly my father's mother. She was a Holocaust survivor, and she was like really involved in his care. And she was just like, how could you get this wrong? How could you get this wrong? I remember the nurses being, I remember them. It was in a small community hospital. We were living upstate New York in Rockland County. And the nurse was crying, like they didn't mean to make a mistake. And years later, I'm in the emergency room and some guy comes in, and the nurse before me didn't do the proper handoff and didn't give me the full information. And I should have double checked this or that, but it was so quick. I had 10 patients, you know, running around. I hang Zosyn, and the guy was allergic to that antibiotic. I caught it, I clamped it, and then I right away notified the nursing. It's called a sentinel event. The hospital has to write it up. But it really affected me, and it really struck me that it's like the same things over and over and over again. We have this issue in healthcare where we're putting out fires and we're not being proactive. We're not thinking ahead. And so if we can come up with a mechanism, you know, at that time, I didn't even think I would become an entrepreneur. I was running around in the ER. But now I really do think that if we can start that paradigm shift, what solutions can we use? What softwares can we use? What technologies can help us deliver the care that we want to? Let's not be so afraid of technology. Let's not be so afraid of the iPhone. Look how much it's given us so far, you know? Sure. And if we can bridge that gap and help deliver it in a way that is digestible by our users, I think we can make tremendous impact.
Yeah, I like your practicality about this and urgency, of course. Yeah, I mean, that's all what it takes. I mean, and this is where the best solutions are born. Just seeing the problem and doing something about it, because we get used to so many things in life that shouldn't be the way they are, but we just think, okay, this is the way it is, and we live on.
100%.
And until someone does something about it. So kudos for you. Looking also at the time right now, I mean, just going through your journey, last question. The company started in 21, and like you say, you're this is your first entrepreneurial journey as a as a founder of a tech company, and you were not in tech. So it's 3 years down the road. What would be a piece of advice, a do and a don't, that you would give aspiring entrepreneurs or colleagues, peers in the market, based on what you know right now?
Do surround yourself with people who've been there and really check yourself. Know what you know and really ask questions about the things. You know, it's very hard to admit that you don't know certain things or that you know, don't be afraid of what you don't know, but ask questions and try to find out what you don't know and through people who've been there. Because I think that in general, society doesn't value people's experience and age anymore. But I think that those are our greatest assets, is that there are people who've gone through that. You know, you're not going to pick it up from a book. I read every single book, podcast, and I listened to, you know, on a morning run. But I'm not going to pick it up from a book. I have to talk to people who've been there, people who failed, because failure is a success in its own right. And, you know, a serious don't is don't give up. It is hard. It's really hard. I was rejected by close to 100 VCs. I was told by two female VCs, you're not investable as a female CEO. It was hard, but they told me that they felt I wasn't the right formula, or I'm too New York and I talk too much. You know, I just didn't fit into what their picture was of what, you know, but I would have my bad days. And I have to also credit my friends and my family at some bad days, but every bad day has an end. And then you have a new morning, and you don't bring the difficulty from the previous day. You go back out there. And, you know, I think that gave me this fresh approach each time I would talk to a new VC. And I had a VC meeting that lasted like 15 minutes. Like, they're like, no, we're not. We don't like healthcare. We're afraid of it. Goodbye. Then why'd you take the meeting with me? You know? And I don't know. I'm not, you know, writing a book about success at this point, because we have to see, you know, I know this journey is going to be a successful one, but I have a long way to go. But I would say that success is based on resilience and attitude. And I'd really, you know, I don't even think it's luck. I think it's resilience. I think you just have to keep going. And all the hardships in my personal life, I think, set me up to be prepared for that. And then surrounding myself with people who gave me good advice, who guided me and coached me and supported me, helped me get to this round and get the company off the ground and being actively used by 10 different groups.
Well said. And I can only agree with this. And I mean, the story that you just told, I mean, it's the part about the grit and the resilience is not a new one. It's so real. And you can only understand what it's about when you actually, your feet on the ground doing it. So yeah, hang in there.
Thank you.
And I think you're really going to be helped by the mission that you're on, because I think that just gives you so much energy to get it right and prove everybody wrong.
But you know what? It's like, I have to say, you know, after we got invested, there was LinkedIn posts. And so some of the investors who said no, like, sent me a message, like, maybe we should revisit this for Series A. And I didn't feel any animosity to them, because I feel that all those no's got me to the right yeses. And I have a global partnership from Spring Bank, who's American, Fresh Fund, is everybody reinvested, whoever invested in the pre-seed reinvested, they exercised the pro rata like 100%, which was amazing. And then I have Bertelsmann, who's German, amazing, such a supportive private equity, and Patango. I couldn't ask for better.
Yeah.
You know? Exactly. So I'm glad for the no's, because it led me to the right yeses. And I always tell this to my girlfriends when they're dating. I say, like, all the no's, all the hardships, when you find the right person, it leads you to the right person. It helps you recognize what kind of person you want to be with. And I think it really applies to business.
It's with everything in life. It's with your partner. It's with your customers. Because also with customers, you can have 100 customers, but there's 20 that are the right ones. And these are the 100%. Ones you should focus on.
100%.
So, thanks for sharing the wisdom. Good luck on the next part of the journey. Where
can
people go to find out more about Gardoq? And or to say hi to you?
You know, definitely through our website, gardoq.health. It's a nice website, and we're doing demos. We're right now partnering with groups, and then we acquire more homes within those groups. So we're not doing an active marketing campaign, but our website has a lot of information. I'll be starting to do a lot more blogging, hopefully once the kids are finally back in school. So, you know, little by little. And then at the same hand, you know, you'll hear about us because we're going to be making some noise.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your time and for inviting me on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. And this ends my conversation with Hadasha. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Hadasha Beckman, co-founder and CEO of Gardog. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.